The Milwaukee Journal sent a Milwaukee Bucks podcast joining you in the early morning hours on Thursday after the Bucks have clinched the Eastern Conference semifinals, winning 4-1. They crushed Boston in Game 5 at Pfizer Forum on Wednesday night. I am joined by Matt Velasquez. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast. Matt, you know from his work with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, covering the Milwaukee Bucks all year long. Matt, that was a whooping. You couldn't have anticipated that. Like, we've said the Bucks are the better team, but you could not have anticipated that they would walk out of Pfizer Forum with a 25-point win in Game 5.
You know, I think if you had asked me earlier in this series or before this series if I thought that would happen, I think the answer is very clearly no.
Yeah.
But after Game 4 in Boston, a game where the Celtics looked pretty defeated, they kind of were slumped shoulders, they looked like they were done. Like they looked like they knew, down 3-1, heading back to Milwaukee, that they were cooked. And, I'm sure, guys, said that they weren't. Marcus Morris, as recently as Wednesday's shoot around, was talking about, we're not going on vacation until a month from now, or whatever, the exact verbiage was that he used. But it didn't take too long for the Celtics to kind of crumble. I mean, they had a little push there in the first quarter. The Bucks were up 11. The Celtics used a 12-0 run to get up one, and then they never led again. and the Bucks just kind of kept the relentlessness coming on defense. They were continuously, working together to make things difficult on the defensive end, but also to find really open, good look shots. They were feeding off each other. They were feeding off the crowd, and just slowly but surely, it just went all the way towards the Bucks' favor, to the point where, nobody of real import needed to play much in the fourth quarter, unless you count Malcolm Brogdon getting some extra, minutes to knock off some rust. It was just a thorough beatdown, the likes of which, we really haven't seen that much, from the Bucks in terms of playoff history.
Like in our lifetimes, for example.
Like in our lifetimes, that's true. But when you look at this season, that's what they do. That's who they are. That's who they've been all season. Brad Stevens said that even before the game. This is who they've been all year. And now they've won five of their 9 playoff games by 20 points or more, which is absolutely wild.
And only won by single digits throughout this whole process, which is maybe even crazier. We'll talk a lot about the elements that the Bucks employed to win this series going away. But the Celtics, there's a couple things that happened in the last two games that really, I feel like, are kind of stunning to me, because I know the Celtics have had their problems chemistry-wise over the course of the season, but to see what happened on Wednesday night when the Bucks got 5 offensive rebounds in one possession and didn't end up scoring, but just the will that the Bucks had versus Boston was so obvious in that moment, at a time where Boston really was in a do-or-die situation, and the Bucks, of course, ended up pulling away from there. And then you go back to Game 4 when the bench famously outscores the Celtics in the third quarter with 8:18 to go as Giannis goes to the bench. And nothing against those guys. We've talked about how great the bench has been in this series and this year. And George Hill had a monster series, and guys like Pat Connaughton were tremendous. But that's not supposed to happen to a Boston team that has this much talent. I know that people poo-pooed the comparison, saying Boston had more talent than Milwaukee. I don't think that they did, but Boston has a ton of talent. Do you lay this at the feet of Kyrie Irving? Do you lay this at the feet of just the guys? Maybe Boston doesn't have that much talent. I mean, what went wrong, do you think, for the Boston Celtics in this series?
I think that anything with the Celtics, you can't really just put it on this series. It's been going wrong for them all year.
Right.
I mean, they haven't met the expectations that they had, or that people on the outside had. I think a lot of people, myself included, expected them to be the best team in the East. I mean, they were in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. They didn't have Gordon Hayward. They didn't have Kyrie Irving. And they still took, LeBron James and the Cavaliers to 7 games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so you take that team almost totally intact, basically intact, and you add Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward, and you would expect that they would be better than they were. And they struggled to find the right fits for all the pieces. They struggled with chemistry. They had issues with some of the quote-unquote younger guys or the kids.
Yeah.
Jason
Tatum did not have a good series.
And he, everybody kind of was trying to find exactly what they were supposed to be doing and just the consistency at which they needed to be doing it. And there were you know, questions about trades and all those types of things. And then they started to hit their stride, like, kind of later in the season. You thought, okay, are these going to be the Celtics? Is this going to be the team that, you know, shows up in the playoffs? They sweep the Pacers, and you're like, okay, well, the Pacers didn't have Victor Oladipo, but that's impressive. Yeah. Like, that's still – and then the Bucks come in and have a pretty awful game one, probably their worst game of the season, or at least one of their worst games this season. And the Celtics are suddenly looking like a team that – that could be the team we all thought they were going to be. I mean, I know Paul Pierce thought that, among others. And then here we are, like, not very much removed from that game one, and the Bucks have won four straight. They've done it in convincing fashion. They've totally dominated the Celtics night after night, game after game. You know, Kyrie wasn't very good this series. Though you'd be kind of hard-pressed to find a lot of guys in the Celtics who were very good. I mean, Marcus Morris had games where he was making shots. You know, Al Horford had his moments, and he defended Giannis fairly well as far as defending Giannis goes. But, for you know, there were times where Jaylen Brown was pretty good and, you know, bringing the intensity, throwing down dunks on Giannis and, you know, making some shots. But overall, that team just never achieved or found what it was supposed to find this season. And so now they have to, you know, figure things out over the summer, and it could be a very different looking Celtics team by the time that the next season starts up again. But the Celtics will stop playing and the Bucks will keep going.
Obviously, one of the biggest factors is Giannis Antetokounmpo. He'll be the biggest factor in just about any series or any game the Bucks play. He had a little bit of an ankle scare in Game 5 on Wednesday night and popped right back up and clearly wasn't bothered by it at all. And he seems to be as healthy as he possibly can be and functioning on a pretty high level. Do you think he took even maybe a step forward in this series, even to another level of greatness? Because as we look back on this, Eric Bledsoe did not have a good series. Boston was a bad matchup for Brook Lopez, and I think that kind of was borne out. Brook Lopez at no point really had a moment in this series where he really took over. You know, Nikola Mirotic is still kind of feeling his way in there. The Bucks did not get Malcolm Brogdon back until Game 5 of this series. A lot's on Giannis, and he definitely delivered and showed that he's the best, maybe the best closer in the NBA right now. I'm sure there's, you know, you could throw James Harden, Steph Curry, whatever, but Giannis is incredible at that. What is your evaluation of how Giannis did here, especially in these last couple games?
I think he's certainly grown as a player. I think in Game 1, he was trying to do maybe a little too much. He was attacking a lot, wasn't finishing with the same success rate that we've seen him do, you know, seen him get in the regular season. It just looked like he was off. Other guys weren't making shots off his passes too, which obviously that's an issue. But he also wasn't reading the double teams and the defense that the Celtics were throwing at him. And so he needed to get better. I mean, he needed to figure out exactly where he needed to be, where the help was coming from, you know, where the passes needed to go. And he did that with flying colors. I think the way that he was able to manipulate the defense, knowing the gravity that he has and the way the defenders were trying to load to him, and if he could just change direction just a little bit, how that would affect the way the Celtics were moving and how he could then open up his teammates and fire off passes to them and get them wide open shots. And he really picked his spots well when it comes to driving and getting one-on-one opportunities, especially, you know, finding switches where he wasn't being defended by Al Horford, and, you know, he could get a one-on-one situation against Kyrie Irving, or he can get a one-on-one against Jason Tatum. Basically, anybody but Horford, he knew he could get to the rim whenever he wanted. And so if he can get those switches and then be able to drive off the wing instead of from the top of the key and play with pace, just all these different things, he was putting them all together and being able to be really efficient, find his teammates. He ends up finishing Game 5 with 20 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists, just doing a little bit of everything. He had a couple blocks in there, too. You know, it just kind of underscores why he is the MVP-caliber player that he's ascended to be this season.
We did mention there Malcolm Brogdon did come back for Game 5, his first appearance in several weeks with the plantar fascia injury. Wasn't clear to me that he was going to play. I think, if I had to guess, unofficially, Mike Budenholzer was looking at it as we're not going to play them until our backs are against the wall, which they never truly were in this series. And maybe if it's a point where we can close out a series, we'll get him some playing time. And then he has a little bit of floor experience heading into the Eastern Conference Finals. What did you see out of him? Initially, you thought when he came back, he might be at full minutes capacity. He was on a little bit of a limit here in Game 5, but did score 10 points. So what did you think of Malcolm Brogdon?
You know, I thought with Malcolm, the way that they've been handling him has been the way that they've handled injuries really all year. They've been aggressively cautious. That's a phrase that Bud used in Detroit earlier this season. I think it was back in December. Actually, when talking about Malcolm, I think it was a back injury at the time. But he's like, hey, we're going to be aggressively cautious, and we're going to make sure that everyone is healthy, and we're doing the right thing for everyone at all times. And that's kind of just what we're going to, continue doing. And, Malcolm probably, he could have played probably, at least a week ago. I mean, he's been playing in scrimmages, kind of behind closed doors and going 5-on-5, being able to do a lot of things. And if the Bucks wanted to bring him back and just say, hey, we'll have him work it out on the court, maybe they could have. Other teams do that type of thing. I mean, Marcus Smart for the Celtics, he had basically no real practice time before coming back. There was a day where he went 3-on-3, and then he participated in a practice on Sunday, and then suddenly he was back for Monday's game, playing limited minutes as it was. But that's not how the Bucks wanted to do things. They wanted to make sure that they were, testing Brogdon's foot, making sure that he could handle all the, all the cuts and the movement and jumping, all the things that he would need to do in a game situation. And, finally it came to pass on Wednesday that now he had been cleared to play fully. And I think he played well. I don't think he looked like he was all that rusty. Sure, he missed a couple shots, but he also scored 10 points, played 16 and a half minutes, which was more than Bud said that he planned for him to play. Obviously the margin in the game had something to do with that. Brogdon was out there playing at the end of the game, getting some extra time to knock off rust. But I think just some of the passes that he threw, the way he was running the court, he made some shots. I thought he looked pretty much like the Malcolm Brogdon we've seen. I know talking to Brook Lopez after the game, he said, hey, like he looked like Malcolm. Like he looked normal. He looked great. His teammates were definitely in good spirits and felt good about the way that Malcolm played. And the expectation is that he'll go back into the starting lineup once they start the Eastern Conference Finals, which will either start Monday if the Raptors win their series in 6, or it'll be on Wednesday if that series goes 7 games, regardless of who wins. We do know that no matter what happens, it will start in Milwaukee.
Well, I'm going to give you 3 amazing stats that I think sort of characterize the dominance of this series. You tell me which one jumps out at you the most. They're all amazing, I think. Giannis had as many 3-pointers made in this series as Kyrie Irving. They both made 7 in the series. Of course, Giannis airballed a few more than the average player or Kyrie, but he did make 7. He was not afraid to take them particularly early in the series. He did not have one in Game 5. Jason Tatum made as many 3s as Tim Frazier. He had 2. Tim Frazier hit 2 in garbage time in Game 5. Obviously, that's not a super fair comparison, but Jason Tatum kind of illustrates he was not effective, particularly from deep. And Pat Connaughton, someone was pointing out how his numbers kind of stack up favorably with Gordon Hayward's over the season. I don't know what you would make of that. Gordon Hayward, a top bench player. Pat Connaughton, one of the bench players, the top bench players for the Bucks. Pat Connaughton outscores Gordon Hayward by a nominal amount. I think it was by 1 or 2 points. But that sort of illustrates how much better the Bucks bench was than the Celtics bench, and in some cases, how much better they were than the starters. Which one of those 3 really surprises you, if any of them?
I mean, all those are great. I get why you called them 3 amazing stats. They are indeed amazing. I didn't recognize any of those off the top of my head. But I think the Pat Connaughton one stands out to me the most.
What a series for him.
I mean, I've obviously the Giannis, and Kyrie 3-pointer stat, it means something. It mostly means that Kyrie was off, because I'm sure he took more than Giannis did.
Kyrie had one game that you could say. Game 1, he was great. I'm not sure he was even good, really good, in any of the other 4.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't even mention his defense, which
ooh boy.
Leaves something to be desired. But we know that.
Like, it was weird in game four, wasn't it, where he was calling out to different guys that he wanted to guard and they were blowing by him? What was going on there?
Yeah, I wish I had an answer. I have no idea. But in terms of, you know, look, the one I mentioned, Connaughton and Hayward, I mean, Hayward is a guy who has been an all-star in the league before. Like, he is undoubtedly a very good player. And obviously he had his injury last season. We all remember that. But he's somebody who, you know, has the ability to be, you know, a high-level starter, just a high-level player in the NBA. And Pat Connaughton, not the same pedigree as Gordon Hayward in terms of what he's accomplished in the league. He was a bench guy, a very solid bench guy in Portland, and then he comes to Milwaukee and, you know, he even took on a lesser role. You know, he didn't play all 82 games like he did last year. He played somewhat sporadically at times, went through some slumps, just like an energy guy. And all of a sudden now in the playoffs, you know, he's bringing that energy. He's making shots. He's being very aggressive on defense, which we've talked about many times. His proclivity for going for blocks doesn't always work, but when it does work, like it did in game four, I mean, that is the kind of play that can break a team's back, really. That when you have a block three-pointer like the one he had against Terry Rozier, then have Sterling Brown catch the ball midair, immediately throw it up ahead for Pat for a dunk, I mean, that was part of a huge stretch in game four that, you know, really changed the series. You know, the Celtics could have gone ahead and they could have, you know, taken game four, and suddenly we're looking at the series at least going six and maybe things, you know, getting away from the Bucks a little bit. And Pat Connaughton, time and again, was able to answer the call. So, you know, the fact that he was able to have a better series than Gordon Hayward, which, you know, Pat Connaughton wasn't with the Bucks last year. Gordon Hayward didn't play in the playoffs for the Celtics last year. Like, if you were able to, at that time, say, next year the Bucks and Celtics will play again in the playoffs, and this time the Celtics will have Gordon Hayward and the Bucks will have Pat Connaughton, which team to give the advantage to,
no doubt,
you wouldn't have picked the Bucks. And so I think that's just really, really impressive. And, you know, Connaughton and George Hill and the whole Bucks bench were just fantastic throughout the series.
Shout out to colleague Kurt Hoag for coming up with those stats and posting them on Twitter shortly after the Game 5 win. Certainly some eyebrow raisers there. So, as you said, the Bucks will play either Monday or Wednesday at Pfizer Forum in Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals. The opponent is to be determined. Toronto, as we speak, has a 3-2 lead on the Philadelphia 76ers, with, of course, the Game 6 being held in Philadelphia. We've talked about Toronto quite a bit, and Philadelphia for that matter, and I think if I'm reading this right, you still would think Toronto is by far the tougher matchup, by far the better team, and rightfully ranked as, or rightfully seeded as, the number two best team in the Eastern Conference. Philadelphia, it strikes me, has a very good starting lineup, five really impressive guys, and maybe it drops off pretty dramatically there to the point that the Bucks would have a pretty marked advantage in bench production again. But Toronto is a little bit of a different animal, and Kawhi Leonard is having a very good postseason and is going to present problems. Which of those the easy question is which one is the tougher matchup for the Bucks? But knowing that the answer is Toronto, what are the things that are going to be key for the Bucks to get through that series?
Yeah, I think when we talk about Toronto versus Philadelphia, I think Philly reminds me of the Celtics in that they have a ton of talent. Like, and it's very obvious. Like, you just look up and down their roster, and especially their starting five, and you know those guys are good. Like, they've got plenty of guys who have you know, become household names, and rightfully so. But the chemistry has been in flux. They've had like three different teams. Brett Brown likes to talk about, you know, with just the different trades they've had, and you know, they just haven't been able to meet the expectations. They've had chemistry craziness. Whereas the Raptors, they kind of remind me of the Bucks, where they have a very, very solid, you know, not dramatic superstar in Kawhi Leonard, similar to Giannis Antetokounmpo, where just both those guys are absolutely, you know, either at or near the peak of their powers, can strike fear in any opponent, but they're also, you know, not going to go out there and give you a ton of bulletin board material. They're not going to say a bunch of things. They're not causing chemistry issues. They are just guys who go and do their job and do it really well, and they set a tone for their teams. And, you know, the Raptors, like the Bucks, you know, they have, you know, pretty decent depth at the very least. You know, they have guys who have been all-stars. They have guys who are up and coming. They have guys who, you know, are long and athletic and can play and defend multiple positions, very similar to the Bucks. And so, you know, I think this matchup would really depend on the Bucks' ability. If the Bucks are going to win it, it would depend on their ability to play consistent defense at the high level they've been playing it recently. You have to figure out how to contain Kawhi Leonard. You have to, you know, be able to load onto him and, you know, trap and double team and, you know, figure out if you're going to switch or you're going to play the defense that they've played often throughout the season where they're dropping, you know, in the pick and roll. Which guys do you leave open? If you leave Pascal Siakam open, usually he's the guy that teams are leaving open for three-point attempts or not worrying about him as much. If he gets going, you know, which he has in games against the Bucks this year, that could be a problem. So being able to figure out defensively the best way to scheme against the Raptors will be important. Continuing to get this same level of bench production, working Malcolm Brogdon back into the rotation and being able to maximize him and what he does, you know, and being able to win in Toronto. I mean, that's how they're going to be able to win this series. They've done it twice this year already in some really fun games. You know, they've had, you know, three games this season where Giannis and Kawhi both played, and those games have been intense. They lost one of those in Milwaukee. They won both of them in Toronto. And so, you know, I think this series, luckily I don't have to figure it out now. We're just only hours removed from game five of Bucks Celtics. So if it is the Raptors, I think that's the important thing. And I think if it's the Sixers, then continuing to neutralize Ben Simmons, somebody who's struggled against the Raptors, who's struggled in the playoffs pretty much in general, neutralizing him will help. Obviously, neutralizing Joel Embiid is even more important, you know, just because of the way that he affects them. Letting him shoot as many threes as he wants and locking down the paint will be important. Yeah, so we'll have plenty of time to figure that out, but I think that Toronto is the better team among the two and would definitely pose the biggest test.
Can this team get to the Eastern, or I should say to the NBA Finals, if Eric Bledsoe struggles? I don't know if you'd say that he necessarily flat-out struggled in this series overall. He did have a couple games that were clunkers, and it just wasn't maybe the same level that we saw Bled late in the season. He kind of had a pretty good game, too. What would you, I guess, a quick evaluation of how you thought he did in this series, and can they win if he's not at his best in the Eastern Conference Finals?
Yeah, I think he had a really good game too. I thought he was really good in game five. I think overall he brought a lot defensively. I wrote about that a couple days ago, just after game four, how his defensive rating among all the Bucks was one of the best. It was, I think, third on the team in the series, and which was kind of a positive sign because I remember last year in the playoffs when he was struggling to score and kind of get going, he was also kind of losing focus on defense and not bringing the intensity and the effort and leaving guys open at times, kind of getting lost. But this series, like regardless of what happened on offense, he was bringing it on defense. He was, you know, challenging Kyrie Irving. Sometimes he was getting fouls of aggression where he was trying to do a little too much and get into a little bit of foul trouble. But overall, his defense was good and his mindset was good, and that's stuff that bodes well for the Bucks. I think that, you know, they are a team that is built in such a way that even if main guys don't have good games, as long as it's not, you know, a large plurality of them, you know, they can weather the storm. I mean, you know, if Giannis has a good game and you know maybe George Hill and Nikola Mirotic and Malcolm Brogdon all have good games, but Chris Middleton and Eric Bledsoe don't, that's not necessarily a death sentence. Oh. You know, the kind of thing where, you know, last season the Bucks needed Giannis and Middleton to have exceptional games, even to lose in seven games in the Celtics.
Like, right.
They had to be exceptional all series long, and they still only won three out of seven games. Where now, like, they can really balance it out so much better. And it's just very rare that Giannis is going to have a bad game. It just doesn't happen very often.
No, it doesn't.
So if you can count on him to have a consistent effort, which he always does, and consistent production, which has been him pretty much throughout the whole season, as long as he can kind of pull a couple guys along with him, or other guys can get their shots to fall. I mean, you look at game 5 against the Celtics, Brook Lopez is 0 of 7 from 3. And those were all of his shots. He had 0 points. You know, he was generally pretty good on defense. He was not, you know, sulking. He was mad at himself for the way that he played, not just for his shooting, but even when the Bucks were up a bunch, like late in the game, you know, he was talking to Mike Budenholzer, and he was mad about defensive assignments that he missed, and thinking about how he had to be better. And so, you know, that's kind of the mentality and the vibe around this team. And you know, as long as they can get a bunch of guys playing well at the same time, you know, they can weather the storm of guys, you know, who might not have the best games.
One last question, just the macro view of what just happened, that the Bucks are going to the Eastern Conference Finals. You know, Mike Budenholzer hasn't even been coach of this team for a year. I think May 21st is the press conference where he's introduced. And the idea that they could be in this position seems like an idea that we wouldn't have quite embraced then. I know that we thought he would bring changes, and we saw it early, and we saw the personnel changes they made. I mean, I think back to the summer when they signed Ersan Ilyasova at the crack of whatever midnight when free agency began, and scratched my head thinking that's the guy that they're going to go after on minute one of the free agency signing period. And, you know, Brook Lopez, I think everybody's pretty happy with that deal, but not sure necessarily that he would become the player that he became. So when Budenholzer was brought in, did you identify that, okay, this could be a pretty special mix? This could be a team that goes to the Eastern Conference Finals? Or were you thinking, oh, maybe they finally win a playoff series? Like, maybe that's what we're finally reaching toward? Because this seems to have moved so quickly from my perspective. And I don't know, maybe you thought it was going to move this quickly.
No, I didn't necessarily see this coming. You know, I thought that they had, you know, the bones of something good. You know, I thought that this would be, you know, an improved team. They already had the talent, and they had the ability to be good last year. I think coaching let them down. I think that was the unanimous decision of the franchise, that they needed to change the culture, they needed to change the voice and the scheme and the staff and just all of that stuff, and starting with the coach. And little by little, like, they turned over the roster. Like you mentioned, like, these are moves that are kind of on the fringes. Like, you know, other teams were interested in Ersan Ilyasova, but, like, you know, that's not going to be an earth-shattering, like, free agent signing.
Especially because that signing really indicated, okay, they're just going to flat-out cut Jabari Parker. Because it's hard to believe that a year ago Jabari Parker was still in the equation.
Right, they're just going to let him walk because he was going to want too much money,
right,
and they didn't want to pay him that money. And, you know, I think that decision has been very much vindicated.
We don't even think about that decision anymore.
No, but if you bring back Jabari Parker, like a lot of people wanted, you have to pay him like $20 million or more because that's what the Bulls offered him. Then that's how restricted free agency works. Mm-hmm. And then you just don't get other guys.
It would have been devastating.
I mean,
if they had made a move for him, it would have been devastating. It would have completely altered this course that they're on.
Yeah, you don't get Ersan Ilyasova. You probably don't get Brook Lopez.
Nope.
You don't get Pat Connaughton.
Not sure you re-sign Eric Bledsoe even at this point. Not that that affects this year, but
you don't have the financial flexibility to take back money in the trade that brought in George Hill. You don't have the financial flexibility to take back money in the trade that brought in Nikola Mirotic. So suddenly, like, you re-sign Jabari Parker and you don't have all those guys, and that's just not going to work. And so I think that the Bucks, they had a very clear vision of what they wanted to do and who they wanted to be. They had a list of, you know, a tiered list of free agents that they wanted. And from my knowledge, like, Ersan Ilyasova and Brook Lopez were in the top tier. Like, they were the guys that they specifically wanted to put around Giannis because, you know, they can play defense, they're big, and they can shoot threes. And, like, if you can space the court around Giannis, I mean, that's what everybody said for a long time, that if you can space the floor around him, you can build something. You know, because if he's not regarded as a shooter, but the four guys around him are, the opposing team has to make a very hard decision. Do you defend Giannis one-on-one and defend everyone else, meaning that Giannis will probably get to the hoop? Or do you double Giannis, leaving some three-point shooter open around the perimeter, and then hope for the best? And so, you know, that choice has been basically the backbone of what the Bucks do offensively, and they have the players to do that. And so I didn't expect that they would go from a 44-win team to a 60-win team in one season. I didn't think that they would pick it up that quickly, that they would you know, adopt this culture and this mentality of we're not losing two games in a row. We don't lose to the same team. Like that, the things that we've heard them say multiple times this season, I didn't think it would happen this quickly. But to their credit, they got together over the summer. You know, they were doing voluntary camps among themselves. They were jumping in, you know, headfirst into Budenholzer's system. And they were, you know, willing to make the changes and accept whatever it took to follow along, you know, the way that Bud wanted them to play. And, you know, they got some good feedback. They played well in the preseason. They won their first seven games, and then they just kept running with it. And so I didn't think that they would necessarily be here. I thought that they would, you know, be reasonably better, you know, maybe around 50 wins or slightly above 50 wins, get into the top four of the East, you know, have a chance to compete for the Eastern Conference Finals. I thought no doubt that they would win in the first round, but after that, like, you know, who knows? And right now we're still kind of in the who knows phase, but that who knows phase could be putting us, you know, into June.
Yeah, I gotta admit, after game one, I was nervous about it because the Bucks, you know, it's unfair to say they haven't shown it in the course of history, but, you know, it was such an unknown. You had no idea how these guys were going to respond, and obviously four wins later, you're feeling pretty good about their chances as they wait to learn who they're going to face in the Eastern Conference Finals. He is Matt Velasquez. Read everything he has at jsonline.com. You can also follow him on Twitter, Matt_Velasquez, VelazQuez. Let him know what you think of the podcast. You can also let me know. I'm J.R. Radcliffe at JRRADCLIFFE. Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. We're going to be back in touch with you very soon, previewing or possibly looking back at Game 1, Game 2 of the Eastern Conference Finals. Matt, we will talk with you then.